Good morning. This is the Real Estate for Breakfast podcast. I'm your host, Philip Coover. I'm an attorney and partner in Ice Miller's Real Estate Practice Group. Today, we have a very special podcast for me. I've known Chris Gersh, our guest, the founder and CEO of Verde Solutions, for about 24 years, and I've been tracking his career over the years. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Phil. Really appreciate being able to talk to you.
Yeah, no, I've been eyeing having you on the podcast for a couple of years now. For the listeners, Chris took off right out of the gates. We were all struggling, 20-somethings, trying to figure out how to do our jobs. And then I saw Chris one day on Squawk Box on TV talking about commodities trading. And, no surprise to anyone. But Chris, really excited to have you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Verde Solutions?
Yeah, absolutely. Verde Solutions is a turnkey energy consultant firm that focuses on renewable energy. And we focus primarily on building, financing, engineering solar systems, add in battery storage and EV where appropriate. But we focus on solar energy, deploying it now in 48 states. We have a little over 1,400 projects that we've built. Everything from college campuses to community centers up on the North Shore to apartment complexes in California. Then we did a big project for DHL at Atlanta Hartsfield Airport. So really all around the country, we're building these systems, and our main financiers for those sort of projects, if they're not self-financed by the business, is Blackstone and BlackRock. And so it's been kind of a culmination of some of my finance history, and then bringing into to my passion of sustainability. So that's Verde Solutions in 10,000 foot view.
Awesome. Thanks for telling us about that. Well, you know, there wasn't a lot of classes that I know of about sustainability in college and solar energy. So how'd you find yourself here? How'd you get the idea to found this company?
Yeah, I kind of fell into it. In that, when I got out of school, I started off first trading down at the Board of Trade floor in the soybean options pit, and then started trading corn futures. I moved to a group at the CME and traded different derivative products, found my way to trading ethanol and then oil and gas, and eventually, just mostly energy products. And so trading energy, I went from, these smaller shops to Merrill Lynch. Then we got acquired by ADM Derivatives. I was young and a little less, my ego is not as in check as it is now. I thought I could go off on my own and went off on my own and raised a bunch of capital. Was trading, things were going good for about 2 years. And then the flash crash of May 6, 2010 happened. And let's just say a good portion of the funds, majority of it that I was managing went down, lost it in a matter of less than 36 seconds, something like that. Two thirds of my book was tens of millions of dollars. And this was May 6th. So I had to the end of the month to make it back, and sort of made a deal with the higher powers to be and said, God, if you get me out of this, I will do something that will honor you, that will just get me out of this with, for lack of a better term, my balls and my brain intact, I had this fear of my parents walking down the grocery store aisle and being like, your kid lost me money or whatever. But I was fortunate that kept their deal. God kept their deal, and so I had to keep mine, and got out of trading. And it had run its course. This was 2010. And I've been doing it professionally for 6 years, and I wanted to do something that I felt good about and made a great living trading. But I ended up going to Brazil after this all kind of washed out in June, and went to a surfing hostel, south of Rio there, and was on a surfboard. I don't know, viewers might have gone to Rio. You got the Sugarloaf, which is in between Copacabana, Ipanema Beach. And there's a similar large mountain structure that comes out of the ocean about 100 miles south, and was able to go there. And there are a bunch of flatlanders like me from around the globe trying to learn how to longboard surf. And my feet were in the water and I felt the sun on my feet. It was like, man, what about solar? And I had no idea. I had no background in it whatsoever, had not studied it, but had an instinct to follow it. And all that money I'd made trading, lost it for pretty fast, trying to learn how to do it over the next 3 years, hiring engineers and all these people that had, you know, a little bit of background. And as you probably know, Phil, you know, renewable energy was really started mostly on the West Coast and a little bit on the East Coast. So back in 2010, it was a new thing here in the Midwest. And so figured it out. I had two partners at the time. We wanted to go in different directions, sold my one third share of Save Wave Energy, at the time was a company, to private equity. And then went on my own, started Verde Solutions in February of 2012. And since then, have been, you know, building these systems.
Well, that's awesome. Now, 1,400 projects later, you are 12 years later. That's pretty amazing. And thanks for telling us that story. That could definitely be an episode of television, be a movie like that, that you found your way. Stressful days, but not like that, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, knowing our friends from college too, sprinkle in some of the crazy personalities that we were around in our 20s. There's definitely some good content there, I would say, for maybe not a book, but maybe a movie or, you know, short series or something like that. Yeah, just with all the characters.
Sure. For sure. We get a 8-part Netflix special.
Yeah.
So I also am interested in renewable energies, commercial real estate lawyer, represent a lot of developers, landlords, you know, so tell us about some of the bread and butter projects that you're working on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing to recognize is, you know, if private equity is dumping in tens and tens of millions of dollars into here, the quote unquote smart money is where can, you know, individuals in commercial real estate take advantage of this? Just to give you an example, Phil, you know, we're doing projects on average between $3 to $5 million. And I'll give you an example, a project we're doing in the suburbs. It's a $5 million project, just under, and they got $5.8 million in total incentives. So that's, you know, 15% of the total gross sale project here in the state of Illinois. At rough 10 to 15% is paid by a ComEd incentive that the end user receives, the owner of the solar array receives in 60 business days after the solar system is deployed or turned on, we call it commissioned. And then you've got the state incentive, which right now, currently with 2023 incentives, they end in June 1st, 2024. But the current incentives pay for another 35% roughly of the total gross project cost. And that's, again, in a cash payment that comes back to the customer over 7 years. And then you've got your 30% investment tax credit, which, you know, individuals are well aware from the U.S. legislation around, you know, the Jobs Act. So that 30% investment tax credit is on the total gross project cost. And it can get as high as 50% if you use, you know, if you procure from local sources in the U.S., the ITC goes up to 40%. And then if it's on like a brownfield or in a certain underserved zones, it can go up another 10%. So you're talking about 50% potentially ITC. The example I'm giving of $5.8 million in incentives for $5 million is just 30% investment tax credit. And then you've got your, you know, your bonus depreciation. So obviously with those guarantees being from the utility, the state, and, you know, the federal government, private equity has really jumped in. And imagine that, and that willing to finance these projects and what they receive, you know, for like a great example is College of Lake County. It made the cover of Chicago Tribune. It was now, that's 2019, 2020, we built that project. And what was great is the college got this huge solar system that was on 13 roofs, a large portion of their back lot that they weren't utilizing behind a, you know, so on top of 13 roofs and another 1,200 panels or so on the ground, a ground-mounted system, was behind a parking lot, you know, space that they weren't even utilizing. And what happened is this offset roughly 20% of their total energy need for the entire college, and they got it at a rate, you know, so Blackstone came in there, financed that project. So let's say that their energy rate, let's just say it was 10 cents that they were paying to ComEd. They got a long-term fixed contract at about, you know, 6.5 cents. So call it 33% less for 20 years. So Blackstone loves it. They get all those incentives that pay for the project. They get a long-term great client. And then we loved it because we knew that we were going to get those, you know, bills paid by Blackstone. And ultimately, the most important part is College of Lake County loves it because they have long-term fixed savings. They can, you know, really budget around those energy savings over the next 20 years. It's called a purchase power agreement. And it's just a great, the solar is not only the right thing to do in terms of sustainability. I mean, you're utilizing fuel from this huge fusion reactor called the sun that's hitting the ground anyway. So you're taking advantage of a resource that is there and doesn't have to be, well, as long as we're around, I hope our kids are around, it's going to be, we'll have no issue accessing the sun. And then
not a guarantee fixed, anymore.
Right. Not a guarantee. And it's, you know, minimal work that you have to do. Once you set these systems up, it's kind of set and forget it. You know, there's some that actuate that kind of track the sun. Those are trackers. We've done those, but right now that they tilt towards the sun, we've got great models that forecast what the return is going to be on total sun production. And it's just a great public private partnership that has people utilizing renewable energy throughout the Midwest, where 10 years ago, you couldn't find solar panels in the Midwest.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. I'm going to break this down even farther. Like, I am dumb because you are so knowledgeable, but I think a lot of people don't know all of these things. But when you kind of take what you just laid out and you think about it, it's just incredibly attractive. You have your obvious social needs, environmental needs, but from a just business standpoint, I mean, it's okay. You're College of Lake County. Mm-hmm. You've got this land and this building. But maybe you don't have a huge appetite to just set up solar just for the sake of setting up solar. But here, if Blackstone is financing, are they just $0 into the project? I mean, maybe some de minimis costs, but they're like, we own this land, we own these buildings, and we got this area behind the parking lot that we're not doing anything with. If anything, we're paying maintenance on it.
Right.
And
And they don't even pay maintenance. So it's owned and operated by Blackstone, that they pay us if there's any issues whatsoever to go out there and fix it. But here's the best part of it. It's these panels are warrantied for, you know, 25 to 30 years for not only the product itself, but the production of energy. And the other thing is they're fixed. You know, when you think about things breaking down, you know, machinery, and, you know, we've done a lot of solar systems on tractor dealerships and things like that. And they're always like, well, what's the warranty? Are you going to come out and service it? And like, this isn't a tractor. We're not, you know, running. There's not a lot of motion in the system. So I can sell you an O&M package. I just, you know, call my blue collar roots. I don't like selling people things that they don't need. I'm like, let's talk about in 5 years. If you want us to come back, I'm happy to sell you an O&M package, but it's not necessary, which is great for, you know, commercial building owners when they think about, you know, just ongoing maintenance, right? Even with roofs is they typically have someone on a schedule to go up there and check, make sure there isn't leaks. Solar, it cleans itself. We get enough rain here in the Midwest, you know, that they're tilted panels. And so the snow, the panels are designed to heat up to have the snow, you know, melt right off. And if they're, you know, oriented to the south. So there's just a lot of advantages to these systems and very, very few disadvantages. you know, another, like one that was always brought up was, how do you recycle? We're going to have all these panels, you know, in 30 years when they run out of their warranty. Truth is, you know, we've had panels since the Nixon era that are still producing. If you do take them off for more efficient panels, they can be recycled now. So Northwestern actually has a really great program for recycling that we work with. So lots of answers.
Does the program end at some point where you would be able to remove it if you wanted to redevelop your property?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a major pushback why people are looking to go solar versus wind, right? With wind, as you know, you pour these huge concrete piers in, and it kind of, it just really, it's decommissioning of those wind farms are, it's a major endeavor. Whereas if you have any issue with these ground mounted systems, they're just I-beams that are pounded into the soil, you know, 4 to 6 feet down, and you just get a backhoe and you pull them up, and then you can farm it the next season. So it's really a technology that isn't going to harm the land whatsoever.
All right. I got another dumb question for you. But that was a good answer to that question, because I imagine future development, just thinking down the line, would be a hesitation of some folks to commit to this. But knowing that a commitment forever is huge. Do the energy that's generated from the solar, does the College of Lake County use that energy, or does that just go back to the grid? And then your benefit is sort of knowing that you're producing sustainable energy, and also that was it the purchase power agreement where you know reduced energy costs for your building?
Yeah. So that's a great question, Phil. The system that the College of Lake County has is what's known as behind the meter system. So behind the meter systems is when the sun is shining, there's energy being produced via the solar panels. The college is going to utilize that energy first, right? So they have an inflow into their buildings. They're going to use that energy first. And whatever extra energy that they need, they're going to pull from the grid, right? So what's cool about solar is, you know, that often those high sunny days, midsummer days, you're going to produce more than your building actually needs. It's just you're getting so much solar production. And in that case, we're the building doesn't need all the energy, you know, called College of Lake County. They don't have, you know, as many classes during the summer, or, you know, it might be when they just have skeleton crew there. What happens is that extra energy that's being produced goes onto the grid via what's known as a ComEd smart meter. So it actually spins the meter backwards and actually credits the College of Lake County on their bill dollar for dollar for what's being produced. So it's a zero sum game. And that's a really important piece of legislation that the utilities are really pushing against here in the state is called net metering. And having net metering allows you, as many states have it, to, when you overproduce, get a credit for both your energy supply and the transmission charges on your energy bill. So in the ComEd bill, you'll see, you know, power from the grid. So because when the sun isn't shining, the college is pulling all the energy from the grid, and then power to the grid is when they're overproducing and building that credit. And then it's a negative number, and it cancels out for what they're charged for at the end of the month.
Amazing. That's incredible. So in our real estate group, we have partners who do a lot of industrial development work. And as anybody who's driven to Wisconsin in the past 3 years or driven down I-65 in Indiana knows that we just can't throw up these enormous gray industrial buildings fast enough along our highways. Mm-hmm. Just big gray buildings just along our highways. And one day I was driving, I was just like, why do they not just all have solar on top of them? And so why do they not all have solar on top of them?
Yeah, a lot has to do with the education and building that cost into the process. So, like, you know, we work with a lot of groups. You know, JFK Airport, we're doing a project at O'Hare right now. It's just educating them on what's available, you know, in terms of total incentives. Because you get the age-old story, you know, especially from roofers, right? They're like, don't put solar panels on the roof. You're going to ruin my roof. And, you know, the worst thing you could want, especially as a commercial developer slash owner, is to have a tenant with, you know, all of a sudden you have this huge cost, right? So they're terrified. If you're going to put these solar panels on and you're telling me you're going to ballast them, which means you're not attaching them. And I mean, that's just sounds like my TPO is going to get ripped. And all of a sudden I'm going to have to deal with all these issues, you know, and there are those horror stories out there, which I believe are amplified by certain groups, you know, to kind of put some fear into people. But if you have a really, you know, strong contractor with a great reputation, there's no reason, to your point, Phil, that they shouldn't have them on there. In fact, there's some really cool strategies, and the individuals that would have to refer to their CPA, but we use this thing called a bifacial panel, like a bifacial solar panel, which allows, you know, it basically sits on the top of a roof with a highly reflective layer, like a TPO, you know, as you know, they're all white, so they're highly reflective. So what happens is the sun will hit the bifacial solar panel, power the top of the panel as it usually does, but it has a clear clear back sheet on the back of the panel. So it actually goes down, bounces off that TPO layer and reflects and powers the back of the panel. And so therefore now that TPO layer is part of the solar system. And so if it's part needed in the solar production, that can then be utilized for that investment tax credit because it's part of that solar system. And so the areas where the solar panels are covering then can potentially, again, I'm not a CPA. You know, there's great companies like Cohen Resnick that can kind of point you in the right direction with this. But that, let's say that 50% of a $2 million roof is, you know, covered by solar panels. Well, that's $1 million, you know, the area that that's covered by. You can argue that 30% of that $1 million would qualify for an investment tax credit, therefore lowers the building costs for some of those huge, you know, buildings that we're talking about. So there's some real educational opportunities, you know, for commercial real estate companies to not only, you know, go green, but, you know, have advantages for building costs. And then there's the net operating income, Phil, that you know, let's say that you got a building, it's $300,000, and all of a sudden you take that $300,000 away because you're producing all the energy via solar. That's multiple, you know, just on the net operating income, and you're going to get that when you sell the building. So there's a lot of advantages, you know, to go solar for some of those commercial buildings.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things about what you just said. One, you could also enter your legal career, because one of my favorite things is just saying you're going to have to check with your CPA. I mean, standard routine almost every conversation I have. So yeah, you're already good at that. But also, I was reading about that last night, the idea of your development or your structure, as long as it's integrally tied to the solar equipment, that you have a good argument for getting that ITC credit attached to other components besides just to kind of your core right. Solar panels. The other thing I was thinking about is sometimes when you're working with your landlord and you're working with commercial tenants, you have your pass-through expenses, which you expect your tenants to make. Mm-hmm. Some of them say you can't pass through capital expenditures, but some leases say you can pass through your capital expenditures, but they might have a restriction, like as long as they're amortized over the useful life of the capital expenditure, and as long as they're installed on the property to try to bring down some of these triple net costs. I would think that a solar development would fall right in sort of in line with what those provisions are intended to do. Is so if you're a landlord, you could be sitting there like, man, I could add this solar and I could pass through these costs, mm-hmm. at least amortized, to my tenants. And then I take some of these credits and depreciation from these capital expenditures. This could be, and the tenants wouldn't even be mad about it because I'd be bringing down their energy costs at the same time. So it's like everybody wins.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you hit it on the head, and this is, your good friends at Midwest over there, you know, some of the ownership groups there. And I just had dinner with them, so I can give them a shout out. But like Dick Spinell and Dan Hansen and those guys, yeah, they're really forward thinking in that. And, you know, you've got your REITs, but you have to, you know, create a special purpose entity somehow to own these different systems. And how do you structure the lease? But it creates another potential revenue stream, because to your point, Phil, you could go in there and say, hey, listen, whatever you are averaging paying over the last 5 years, 3 years, 1 year, we're going to lock in an energy savings of 90-85%. But what we're going to do is we're going to take over your ComEd bill. You're not going to have to worry about it. We'll write that. We're going to, you know, take care of it. You're just going to pay us 90% of what you paid. And all of a sudden, you create a new revenue stream for yourself. And you don't mind, because you own that system and all that money is coming back in incentives anyways. And the other great part is there's firms out there that are purchasing the investment tax credit. So if you don't have a tax appetite necessarily for that investment tax credit, even though it goes back 3 years and forward, you know, 23 years, you can sell that. I've seen anywhere from 80 cents to 92 cents on the dollar with the way that the new investment tax credit rule works.
That's a pretty high percentage. I was wondering actually what they trade for, if it's dollar for dollar, if there's a slight discount. I assume there's some discount to incentivize people to take it, but that's a pretty high percentage. And the other thing I was thinking about is this could also help you with, if you have certain ESG requirements. So we had Sarah Canella of NAI come on a few months ago on the podcast to talk about how foreign investors, some institutional investors, were demanding that companies show ESG efforts, and this would be one way to satisfy some of that criteria, is just to plug in some sustainable energy so that you can meet ESG requirements. And also to, you know, if you're trying to get competitive for tenants and investors, you know, this is an attractive add-on to your operation.
Yeah, no, and all the components of that ESG, you know, total metric tons offset by the system, equivalent trees planted, cars off the road, gallons of gasoline removed from the atmosphere. Those are key metrics that we key on. And that's kind of like the cream on top of the cake at the end, is just seeing all those numbers. And those are posted by, you know, the Department of Energy. And we go straight to the website, pull that data, put that up there. And they love that. I can tell you, the U.S. companies are a little bit behind. As you had mentioned, a lot of our clients are Japanese, European, a lot of German manufacturing that are mandated to put on solar. And so their incentives, they're, you know, Germany, Japan, they've done it already. And they did it just based on it being good business and being good stewards of the environment. The fact is, you add all these incentives, you know, for job creation that we have in the U.S., they're like no brainer. So, you know, you get one site, you end up getting all their sites as long as you do a good job. So that's been a real big focus of ours, is to key on those European and Asian clients.
Yeah, as we were talking about that, I even see in Mexican leases, I've had the opportunity to take a peek at some of those and some industrial developments in Mexico, and they're focused on more like energy reporting obligations. But where did you say, I kind of missed, like, where did you say that you find out those statistics? Like, and are you able to tell?
Yeah. It's basically the Department of Energy website. You post them exactly what the size system that you are putting on your array and how long you're going to have it. Even gets down to the specs of the solar panels, and you end up being able to, see all those metrics. It comes on like a big one page form. So,
got a partner, Brad Jones, who came over from Deck Rock, and one day he and I were having lunch, and he was just telling me about all these solar credits. It was a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, and I was just like, Brad, I don't want to do the legal work. We need to quit and go start a solar company like right now. Like this business makes too much sense. It's just there's just a lot of great things for it. So to set up that lunch.
Yeah, so we're good. We got a good runway. The investment tax credit, Biden extended that for 10 years. So we got till pretty much the end of 2031 to get this all, you know, keep going. But I would assume it's going to be even more urgent at the time. So it's hope, you know, something that, you know, Obama and Trump just continued, and Biden, you know, really kicked it into gear with a 10-year extension. But also, before, in order to take advantage of that 30% investment tax credit, you needed passive income. But now it can be, it's crazy. There's two main things. It can be on any ordinary income that tax credit offsets. So anyone can really participate in it. It can be assigned to anywhere. But get this, non-for-profits like schools and churches, even though they don't pay taxes, they can get a 30% investment tax credit. So
what do they do with it? Just sell it?
They sell it, or, you know, they'll take it as a payment.
Oh, yeah. Right. Just straight in the pocket.
Yeah.
So all great information. So what's your biggest challenge as a company in growing your business and scale and doing more projects? Is it education? Is it manpower?
Well, fortunately, you know, like or not, and it's a problem trying to have my engineers that are on staff not want to go out and install projects. So prevailing wage here in Illinois is like $85 to $95 an hour. So you get hiring people at $85 to $95 an hour is not an issue. So once that was part of the investment tax credit, the law, it's been no problem bringing people on. But what is the problem is that the utilities are definitely, they're the bottleneck. They don't have a huge motivation to push these projects through. And what you do is when you have a project, you file what's known as an interconnection agreement. And that interconnection agreement is basically a study, you know, and it ranges, they have four different levels of what it's going to take in order to put this system live on the grid. And those studies can take in themselves up to 180 days, depending on the level. And then, you know, there's technical peer reviews, all sorts of things like that. But then once it's approved, if they have to add a new substation or upgrade transformers, you then have to get on their schedule and front capital for them to do that. So, you know, we're doing a project in a northwest suburb where the project was ready to roll. And we were, you know, going through the engineering permitting process. They come back to us during the interconnection study saying, all right, you have to write us a check for $500,000. And once you write us that check for $500,000, we're then going to put you on our schedule. And right now, in order, you know, we're estimating 344 days before we're able to make that upgrade. So that just, as a commercial business, that is just hard to plan for. You know, you want to purchase product, you want to, hard to plan in terms of cash flows and time spent. We're fortunate we're big enough where we can deal with those sort of things that come up. But then having those tough conversations, Phil, where you got to go back to a client with a potential change order for $500,000 that they didn't forecast, you know, while they're making their board decisions. And so then taking that in terms of your margin you have reputation risk and things like that. They don't necessarily understand that was ComEd. You know, you hope that you've been able to convince them it's not any sort of bait and switch. So you're just providing documentation. It's always an awkward conversation when you have to go back with change orders. And that's something that I'm starting to get used to with the utilities across the country. And what's happening is they're losing revenue, right? They're losing billable revenue by losing that transmission. And I feel like they're replacing it with these huge orders that that we're having to do to upgrade transformers and things like that.
That's extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
sure you're getting better at talking to clients at the outset about that potential occurrence, but I'm seeing that in the development world as well. You know, you just have a lot of slowness in getting projects approved. And I've also recently seen like dramatically increased tap fees. I don't know why they're in development. Like you might want to connect to water, but in certain parts, which could be $1,000 in some parts of the country, but I've seen $200,000-$300,000 bills for like a water connection fee just to develop a property. It's just a way to tag a developer to get them some income streams. That's really frustrating. You know, I was just also wondering, like, what's new? What's next? What are you guys
doing? Yeah, no, you know, I think as you grow and you scale businesses, you're always, you know, educating yourself when you run into these situations, hiring smart attorneys like yourself to kind of help you along, hiring the right lobbyists in the right areas. You know, we're at the point in our career where we know that's about who you know that can kind of move these projects along. But you know, we follow the traction model, as a part of like YPO, and it's the entrepreneur operation system. And so you kind of create these rocks quarterly, yearly. And my 10-year goal was to be acquired by Elon Musk for $26 billion. So you know, we'll see what happens in 2034, but my four kids would be really happy if that happened. I would just shoot big. I'm still a lecturer at the University of Chicago. I enjoy the teaching side of things. I'm trying to work some stuff out with Kellogg. It'd be cool. I really enjoy the teaching aspect, coming on and doing stuff like this. And, you know, Phil, you've inspired me. I feel like there's a story to be told to kind of expand on this podcast and the sustainable, you know, real estate world. And I might ask for your mentorship and how you got going. And so cool to see so many going through your list of previous guests, so many people that I've run into just in the space, and, you know, former friends from school. So to grow up and be more like you, Phil, would be a goal of mine.
That's very nice of you to say, but totally unwarranted. But the podcast is fun. I would encourage you. Oftentimes it gets pushed down for priorities, but it is the most fun thing that I do. And I do learn the most from doing it. Like it's just great. Like I have so many friends I've had over the years where you just enjoy a format where I can just actually ask them about their business. And it's not, you know, like awkward just to pepper them with questions.
Right, with a cocktail with kids pulling at our pockets, get the whole conversation out. No, I really enjoy it.
And then kind of last question for you is just after listening to you, I have to think that almost everybody I know should be exploring this in some sense. You know, it's almost like you're just potentially missing huge opportunities if you're not at least thinking about these things and how they might help your business. You're only one man, so everyone can't reach out directly to you because you can only be in so many places. You also have four kids, as you mentioned, so that's a lot of time too. But how do people reach out to your company?
Yeah, they can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I think that's always a good way. That's how you and I kind of reconnected. LinkedIn, Chris Gersh, Gersch. My email is, you know, cgersch@verdesolutions.com. C, G as in golf, E as in Echo, R as in Romeo, Sierra Charlie Hotel at verdesolutions.com. And, you know, I'd love to, you know, any of your partners that you work with, I'm happy to come in and have some of the smarter people on my team talk about ways to implement strategies. I'll come too, but I'll, you know, most likely let them talk. And we'll do lunch and learns. That's what I've been doing. I've been doing, you know, architecture firms, roofing groups. I've gone in, bought the group and their salesmen or consultants or architects lunch and just talk about it. A lot of it's as we alluded to during the last hour, it's just education and knowing what's out there and how to take advantage of it. It's really simple, you know, and the other cool part about it is all these partners, I love paying referral fees. Like my entire business was built on partnerships and individuals like yourself that introduce opportunities. You know, we just got in-house salespeople full time. Like, it was just engineering, development, and construction, and it's all been word of mouth. So looking forward to bringing in different partners, other developers, you know, architects, B2B professionals that want to refer, and it's just cherry on top. It's usually, it's pretty good. It's an extra, you know, 2-4% of gross, you know. So if you got a $5 million project and be conservative, you know, 3%, that's an extra 60 grand for a referral. So it's there, and something that I hope that at least one or two people listen to this last couple minutes of this podcast and want to follow through with. But yeah, Chris Gersh, G-E-R-S-C-H on LinkedIn, and cgersh@everydaysolutions.com is the best way to get a hold of me.
Chris, thanks for coming on the show.
This publication is intended for general information purposes only and does not and is not intended to constitute legal advice. The listener should consult with legal counsel to determine how laws or decisions discussed herein apply to the listener's specific circumstances.